First of all, I want to say how happy I am to see everybody here tonight and how happy I am to be here, especially since I was able to leave my husband with my daughter to struggle over new math, and I got to leave, so that was really a pleasure. You know, when they asked me if I would talk about hate crimes on talk radio, I thought it was a really interesting topic, but when I started looking into the literature, I discovered there's not a whole lot of research that's been done on this particular link. So what I've done is I've gathered some statistics. You heard some local statistics, and I'm going to be providing you with a few nationally compiled statistics from the FBI just to kind of give you a breakdown in terms of who the victims are and what the ratio of victims are for the hate crimes that are out there. And then talk a little bit about some of the psychological dynamics that go on that motivate hate crime. The link between hate crimes and talk radio is real difficult to make, simply because when somebody commits a hate crime, it's usually difficult to pinpoint one single cause. It's very difficult for a social scientist to be able to say it was listening to that show that caused that particular act. But certainly, knowing what we know about persuasion and propaganda, which I'll be talking about a little bit later, there might at least be some link between listening to talk radio and the commission of hate crimes, in the sense that listening to talk radio may soften social norms, provide the sense that somehow society sanctions this type of action against other groups. So I'm going to be exploring some of the psychological dynamics as well as going over some of these statistics. Before we talk about the data, I do want to make a point that the captain made also, and that is the data that we collect on hate crimes, any type of data that we collect that's been gathered by various agencies, is imperfect at best. There are a lot of things that really can flaw data. With hate crimes in particular, when we look at national statistics, we're talking about 49 to 50 different states, all of which may have different legal definitions of what constitutes a hate crime. So that's going to make data collection a little more difficult to synthesize and to interpret. It was mentioned that underreporting is oftentimes a problem, and that is particularly true with hate crimes. In fact, the research indicates that the more heinous the hate crime, the worse the act is against the individual, the less likely that person is to report the crime. The crimes also vary depending on the nature of the victim. Gay people, homosexual men, lesbians, bisexuals, etc., tend to be the most disenfranchised members of society, and they in particular have more issues in terms of reporting a hate crime. Women also, by the way, would fit into the general area of gender, but rape tends to be thought of and discussed and interpreted in a completely separate category. Another problem with data collection has to do with time frames. Some states will allow a month for the reporting of a hate crime, others up to a year. And then, of course, differences in agencies, whether we're talking about the ACLU or the Anti-Defamation League or what have you, they may vary in the techniques that they use to collect data. But it's a starting point. There's certainly nothing new about hate crimes in terms of it being a 21st century phenomenon. I think we all know they've been around for a long, long time. Data that's been collected, however, is relatively recent, and we've just started collecting data in the last 10 years or so. So with that said, let me just give you a little bit of information. This is from 1995 FBI statistics. In 1995, and unfortunately the number has increased since then, there were 7,947 hate crimes reported in 49 states, including the District of Columbia. 30% of these were crimes against property, and that would include things like vandalism and setting crosses on fire and that type of thing. The other 70% were personal attacks, physical assaults, and the like. Why people commit hate crimes? One of the most common answers from the psychological point of view is that when you commit a hate crime, you're sending a message. You're sending a message that this particular person, because he was his or her member to a group, is not welcome. And this is a very strong and powerful message. Oftentimes, is the purpose and intent of a hate crime. But our hate falls into different categories. Racial hatred is at the top of the list. Racial hatred, there were 4,831 of the 7,947 hate crimes that were reported in 1995 were race-related. Top list, anti-black. Okay, that was 2,988 hate crimes were motivated by anti-black sentiments, 1,226 anti-white, 516 anti-Hispanic, 355 Asian Pacific Islander, and 41 American Indian Alaska Native. So there definitely is some rank ordering in terms of who gets the brunt in terms of frequency of assaults. But race is really at the top of the list. Religious discrimination also has a fairly notorious history in our country. And again, at the top of the list in terms of religious discrimination until recently, until 9/11, of the 1,277 religious-based hate crimes, 1,058 were perpetrated against Jews. And that historically has always been the largest percentage, the largest chunks of race crimes, or excuse me, hate crimes that are based on religion. 31 anti-Catholic, 29 anti-Islamic. Now this is 1995, and I was unable to dig up current statistics regarding anti-Islamic or anti-Arab hate crimes. Unfortunately, I have American Online, and I tried getting online earlier today, and it wouldn't let me. So I'm hoping that somebody else from our panel will have that information. Sexual orientation is another category. Sexual orientation is discrimination against people based on their sexual preference orientation. And in 1995, over 1,000 hate crimes based on sexual orientations were perpetrated, the largest bulk against homosexual males, followed by anti-female homosexual sentiments, and of course, anti-bisexual sentiments. These are some of the major categories, but who commits the hate crimes? There's really not a whole lot that's known, but what is known is they do tend to be young men between the ages of 18 and 25. That also is a time when men tend to have the highest levels of testosterone and are more likely to commit the most violent crimes, and so it's not surprising that that age category does fit in there. What's interesting about these young men or the people who commit the hate crimes is they tend to believe that there is social support and sanctioning for their behavior. They tend to believe that what they're doing isn't all that bad. As a matter of fact, they oftentimes tend to be relatively law-abiding young men who believe that what they're doing is going to be somewhat supported. So, you know, if I go out there and I throw a beer can or a bottle at a homosexual in the Tower District, you know, I'm probably going to like to think that most people are going to kind of, you know, pat me on the back and tell me it was a job well done, okay? And that's very interesting because I think the motivational dynamics regarding why people commit hate crimes is something that we really need to understand. One motivational dynamic, one sort of category of persons who commits hate crimes is the ideological assailant. Now, the ideological assailant sees themselves as enforcing moral values. Okay, these are the people who believe that what they're doing is basically being sanctioned by the rest of the culture. They tend to believe that most people share their viewpoints in terms of anti-gay, anti-black, anti-Arab sentiments. And because they believe that most people share their point of view, they tend to overestimate the percentage of people, you know, who really agree with them. Given that, one could see how they might actually act on their bias and commit a hate crime, okay? Another category are the self-defense assailants. And self-defense assailants are responding to what they believe is a perceived threat of aggression from their victims. In other words, they perceive that there are the victims out there are posing a real and dangerous threat, and so they're going to strike before they strike against them. The third category are just plain old thrill seekers. These tend to be adolescent males who go out there and do it for kicks and for fun, followed by what's called the peer dynamic assailant. These are individuals who like to show off in front of their friends. So when they go out and commit a hate crime, there's a certain amount of machismo, patting each other. I have 2 minutes? Okay. Patting each other on the back and that type of thing. So those are some of the motivational dynamics and some of the different types of assailants that are out there. But what about the link between talk radio and the commissions of hate crimes? Is there a link? Possibly. Based on what we know about persuasion, if you go listen to a talk talk radio show, you may have noticed the following tactics that are oftentimes used. And these are very common tactics. This has been shown in psychology to be a very effective way to manipulate and persuade people. One is to use emotional and fear appeals. One way to get people to respond to a message is to instill them with fear and to provide them with a solution. And so if you can make people fearful enough, particularly an uneducated or uninformed audience, then they are much more prone to accepting a persuasive message. Patriotism is an emotional thing, and I'm not here to say that it's good or bad, but patriotism oftentimes does involve very strong emotional responses, so much so that it derails logic and thinking and reasoning in the process. So we have to be very careful when we hear overly emotional appeals from talk radio or any other type of agent. They also tend to use one-sided arguments, so we know that one-sided arguments tend to do the job. If you don't know that much about something and somebody comes along and just gives you one side of an argument, it sure does make sense that what they're saying is true. And if you don't have any information to engage any kind of counter-argumentation, then you're going to believe pretty much everything that's being said. The thing about talk radio is that there tends to be a grain of truth in what they say, so oftentimes as a way of sort of supporting their position, they'll come up with one really nice example of why what they're saying is true, which brings me to one additional thing, and that is, I have 30 seconds, we tend to respond very much so to very vivid and personal examples. So one good example carries a lot of weight. So oftentimes when you listen to talk radio, what you'll have is the host of the radio show will say, you know, I had an incident with an Arab American just last week. Let me tell you about it, folks. Okay? And it's a bad one. I mean, it's a real vivid, very emotional appeal. And based on that one vivid example, people will oftentimes assume that the rest of Arab Americans or Black Americans or whomever are all like that. That's what the research has shown about the effects of persuasion, of the use of vivid and personal anecdotes, one-sided arguments, and that is that we are very vulnerable to those persuasive tactics. Given that information, when we log into talk radio shows and we hear these persuasive tactics, particularly if we're a naive or uninvolved audience, we're much more likely to believe, and when we surround ourselves with other people who share our belief, we're much more likely to believe that everybody agrees with our point of view. From what we know about people who commit hate crimes, that they do believe that there's a certain amount of social support and sanctioning, it is possible that talk radio could instigate in a small percentage of people the idea of actually acting on their hatred and engaging in hate crime. Thank you for your attention. I think I went 30 seconds over.